Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future. I'm Robert Crowther, Director of Communications for Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. And joining me again today is Dr. Jonathan Wells. Jonathan, as many of our listeners know, is a scientist with a PhD in biology from University of California, Berkeley. And he is also the author of a brand new book called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Darwinism and Intelligent Design, which is out now and available online and at bookstores around the country. Welcome, Jonathan. It's good to have you here again.
Pleasure to be here, Rob.
Many people think that some of the best evidence for Darwin's theory comes from the fossil record. So I wanted to talk with you today a little bit about Darwin's Tree of Life. Most people have seen this. It's commonly used to illustrate common ancestry, how from the first living organism, all of life has developed to what we see today. I know you don't agree, Jonathan. Why is that?
Well, Darwin's Tree of Life, which was the only illustration in his book, The Origin of Species, shows living things evolving from a common ancestor in a branching tree pattern with a common ancestor at the base. When we go to the fossil record, however, we look at, for example, the major groups of animals, what biologists call the phyla. And the major animal phyla appear in the fossil record at about the same time, fully formed, with no evidence that they come from a common ancestor or have a branching tree pattern preceding them. Mm-hmm. So rather than this gradual appearance of phyla over time, one from the other, they all appear together. This is called the Cambrian explosion, and even some Darwinian biologists have said this stands Darwin's theory on its head. Darwin himself was aware of the problem, actually. He hoped that future fossil finding would alleviate the problem, but in fact it has made it worse.
Now, the Cambrian explosion I've heard referred to sometimes as biology's Big Bang.
Yes.
And what it is, what you are saying is that essentially all the basic forms of living things that we know of today appear relatively the same time in the fossil record during that period.
Well, most of the animal forms, the basic forms, for example, the form that characterizes crabs and insects, the form that characterizes starfish and sea urchins, the form that characterizes us, vertebrates, animals with backbones, the form that characterizes earthworms, roundworms, various other basic types of animals. So it's certainly not true that all modern forms appeared in the Cambrian explosion, but the basic body types did.
Right. And I guess speaking in terms of geology, it seems like they appear in the fossil record in a relatively quick way. And by that, I've heard it's like about 10 million years or something. Whereas for Darwin's theory of natural selection to work over eons of time would take far, far, far longer than that. So even if you said, well, it must have happened the way Darwin said, and they all came about right there, and we just don't have the evidence for it, it would seem that there wasn't enough time for that to have actually happened.
Well, it used to be possible to say that the evidence for the ancestors of the phyla was just missing, didn't fossilize or something like that. But we know too much now about the fossil record for that to hold water anymore. The forms, as far as we can tell, did not exist. The major forms do not come from a common ancestor in the fossil record. They appear basically suddenly, geologically speaking, fully formed. Let me point to another problem with the fossil record that actually goes to the heart of this, perhaps even deeper. It turns out it's impossible in principle to establish ancestor-descendant relationships from fossils. Here's why. Imagine in your backyard you were to find two human skeletons. You dig up two skeletons, but without written records and identifying marks, there's no way you can tell whether those two skeletons were related to each other, those two people. And yet they lived relatively close together. They're the same species. When you go to the fossil record, you're dealing with different species that lived far apart in time and space. And many Darwinian biologists have acknowledged you just cannot establish ancestor-descendant relationships from that record. What you do is you go to the fossil record with a theory in hand. you assume the theory is true, and then you plug the fossils into the story. But that's not evidence for the theory. That's overlaying the theory on the evidence.
Right. Wow, that's interesting, because Darwinists often accuse design proponents of overlaying the evidence with their presupposed ideas. And yet we see this in Darwinism, like you just explained, all the time, where the evidence is kind of forced to fit the theory.
Yes. If anything, it supplies merely window dressing for a theory that's asserted to be true independently of the evidence.
And where you have this, like Darwin's Tree of Life, isn't that what you commonly find in textbooks supporting the theory as if it were, you know, pretty much ironclad evidence for it?
Oh, yes. In fact, virtually all biology textbooks, at least introductory textbooks, contain some version of Darwin's Tree of Life. Many of them do not even mention the Cambrian explosion, and the few that do tend to dismiss it as, well, that's just a minor problem for the theory, you know, which we will eventually solve. But the truth of the matter is the Tree of Life is a theoretical construct that precedes and is independent of the evidence.
Right. And it's interesting that some textbooks don't mention the Cambrian explosion or downplay it, because isn't it the case that in the scientific literature there's a great deal of study of that and acknowledgement by biologists of some of the problems that poses for Darwin's theory?
Well, there are Darwinian experts on the fossil record who say it is the most dramatic phenomenon in the fossil record. So it's hard to ignore, unless, of course, you're interested in indoctrinating students rather than educating them.
Right. And unfortunately, that seems to be the case with some of the textbooks in question. Thanks for being here and answering these questions today, Jonathan. If any of our listeners are interested in answers to questions like these, you can find a list of 10 questions for your biology teacher on the webpage for Jonathan's new book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Darwinism and Intelligent Design, at www.darwinismandid.com. That's darwinismandid.com. And if you have a question for us here at ID the Future, or for Jonathan or another one of our scientists, send it to us at info@idthefuture.com. I'm Robert Crowther for IDTF at the CSC in Seattle. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Finn. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.